And I understand that that was a late time for all you. I was studying. That's what I was doing up late. So whenever I found out the news, it was pretty exciting, but I was very welcome to go to sleep. When Austin contacted me to speak here, I was very excited. I chose the topic, Stand Firm in the Midst of Trials. I think it's either ironic or strategic that Austin assigned me this date with this topic right after this most controversial election that we have. And a good preacher would involve all the relevant issues that we are facing, like the election. Unfortunately, I deleted the email with the guideline that Austin sent. We all know how easy that can be. That was probably too soon. Hopefully you guys won't be disappointed in a huge way. All bad jokes aside, I'm excited for the country, and I'm curious to see the change that we're going to endure. And I know that the new president may not be qualified, so they say, but I know that there are plenty of people who are unqualified who have done great things. And if you want some examples of that, you can look in this book right here, and you can find out that God has done a lot of great things with people who are not qualified. So let's hope and pray that God has his hand in the change that this country is about to partake in. I want to give the guys who helped me some recognition, because that seems like the thing to do. Jared Green, he's a freshman Bible major, and he does such a great job at leading singing. And I love singing, and I appreciate his ability to lead. And I knew that asking Jared would be a great idea, because even if my lesson was a bust, we could at least all leave saying, well, at least the singing was good. With the other guys, Hayden, Blake, I don't know where he went, Blake, and Hunter, they're all right. Noah Steele, my roommate, was going to help, but if you didn't hear, last night they had homecoming and they were playing basketball. And from the story that I heard, if you look at him now, you'll notice that he's wearing a boot on his foot. The story that I heard is one of the female athletes put him on skates and he broke his ankle in two places. So let's not let him get away with that embarrassing feat. As a custom, I want to say thank you to the congregation here because they let us use the facilities. I want to say thanks to the elders and other ones that are leading now and have led. I've worshipped here in Wednesday nights for the last 4 years, and it's made a huge impact in my life, and it's such an honor to speak here tonight. Open your Bibles to James. James, we'll start in verse 2. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And we'll skip down to verse 12. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. To find meaning and application in what James has wrote, I feel like I need to give some context. The book of James was written by the brother of Jesus, James the Just, so he's called. It was intended for the 12 tribes of Israel, and you'll see that if you read the first verse. Now, in the time that this was written, the 12 tribes of Israel were scattered due to persecution from Rome and by individuals such as Saul of Tarsus, who sought after all those who claimed to follow Jesus. James wrote to these people to encourage them to continue, even though they were being persecuted, to show that there were meaning behind the trials that they were enduring and the tests that they were going through. James writes in verse 2, Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. This passage can be somewhat confusing. Never in my life can I say that I've had a joy attached with a trial. There are two separate ideas put together that I just don't understand. How can I find joy in a trial? The word trial and the meaning or another way of thinking of trial, like many of us know, is suffering, tribulation, pain, grief, stress. These are things that come to mind when I think of the word trial. The word trial is translated in two ways in the New Testament. It's either meant to be an enticement of sin, or it can mean external afflictions. Now, we know that James was speaking to a group who were being persecuted in a physical way. They were driven out of their homes, forced out of their lands, and beaten and even killed because of the beliefs that they held. And he urges them to have endurance, and hold on. This verse still applies to us, even though it's very unlikely that we have gone through a physical persecution like they did. But just because we have not been through a physical persecution doesn't mean that we don't have trials in our lives. The things that you and I go through are not based off a universal scale. Our struggles are our own. And the intensity of those struggles is not based off of the trials of others. Do not think that because you are not being physically persecuted that you are not going through something, that something is not trying your faith. Make sure you understand me when I say this. Do not underestimate your trials, your suffering, your pain, just because it's not as drastic or big as someone else's. I lately come to my closing time here, Fried, and I've been struggling with worry. That worry is something I think that a lot of people who are graduating soon or graduating in the past understood. Along with finding a job, which I have found a job, so that worry is off my shoulders. But since I'm graduating free, the worry is more paying my student loans. And having these student loans, it scares me to death considering the amount. And I moved to the point where I started asking people who have already graduated, like, how it's going for you. What's happening in your life? As I just wanted to find some comfort in knowing that maybe we were on some common ground. Well, I didn't really find any comfort in what they told me. Eventually, I went to see Brother Billy, and I said, I just wanted someone to tell me that it was going to be okay. And I said, Brother Billy, like, am I an idiot? Am I crazy for coming here and putting myself in such a financial dilemma? He confirmed. He said, yes, you're an idiot. But not for coming here and not getting the education and life-changing opportunities that you did receive here. Maybe you find yourself in similar situations. Maybe you find yourself going through various episodes of stress or anxiety that others just don't see. When you go to college, it brings about and exploits free thinking. You start to develop a faith of your own, and you're not leaning so much on your parents' faith. Maybe you're struggling to find your faith. You seem to have more questions than answers, and things just aren't panning out, and you start to maybe feel alone or lost. You may have a strong faith, but you struggle with other things. Maybe things such as depression. Things are happening, and you just can't seem to ever get ahead. That makes you turn to finding other means of happiness, whether that's drugs, alcohol. You just can't gain control, so you decide to go through your life by numbing the things that you can't control. Maybe it means moving forward in a relationship, crossing boundaries that you have originally set for yourself. Maybe it's more severe than that. Maybe you just don't want to deal with anything at all, and you contemplate just ending your life. The point is, struggles are different for everybody. Trials are different in each of our lives. But like I said earlier, there's still a lingering question about how am I supposed to find joy in any of this? How are you supposed to find joy in suffering? Every weekend I drive to Murray, Kentucky to work and worship. I see the same man who is a father, a husband. I see him, I hold his children, and I think about the wife that he lost, the daughter that she was, the mother that's now gone, as she fought her way through cancer. And I'm supposed to look at him and tell him to find joy in this. Find joy in the troubles that you have. I'm supposed to reassure him that there is joy to be found. Or how am I supposed to look at my grandfather and tell him to find joy as he watched his wife suffer for 4 years to that horrible disease? Or how am I supposed to tell my mother that she can find joy in these dark, sad times? What is James talking about? What does he mean? What can he possibly mean finding joy in trial? The reason that we can find joy in trial, the reason that there is joy to be found, is because these trials are meant to strengthen our faith. They're not there to prove that we have faith like Abraham was trying to prove through God through sacrificing his son. No, it's not like that. But it's a test. It's to prove that we have endurance, that we have resolve, that we have determination in our lives. We're to find joy that our faith is reaching perfection, lacking nothing, that no trial can pierce it. We shouldn't be upset or angry that there are trials in our lives. But find joy in knowing that you have a strong enough faith that is up to the task, ready to endure no matter what is thrown your way. So find joy not in the trial itself, but find joy in the strengthening of your faith that it produces. If you want to turn your Bibles to 1 Peter 1, 6 and 7. 1, 6 through 7. I'll just read this to you if you don't want to. 1 Peter 1, 6 through 7. In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. It's a great thing when your faith is tested. Why? Because it's an opportunity to share hope. If you are taking notes, that's my first point. It's an opportunity to share hope. In the book of Exodus, in chapter 2, we read the story of Moses. Now, Moses, as we all know, he knows trial. But the great thing about having trials and the great thing about the trials that he has is when they're over, we are better prepared to share what we have learned and minister to others. Moses was in a low point in his life. He fled Egypt after having murdered a man. He was alone, and his life was near nothing when God chose him out of everyone to free his people. A man who had suffered and grieved was the right man for the job because of his past. You have that opportunity as well. Who better to comfort someone who has lost a relative or loved one in a car accident than someone who has been through that? Who better to listen to someone who is struggling through cancer than someone who has endured that? It's not a place to say, well, I know what you're going through. It's okay. Suck it up because you're going to make it through. No. It's time to relay comfort, to share hope. Share the hope that you have, the trials that you went through steadfastly. Share the hope that you've gained from that. Secondly, and it's an opportunity to love. In times of pain and sorrow, what do you want? What do we all want? What do we all crave as humans? It's the attention of others. Now, not in an arrogant way, as in, look at me, but as in a, I just need you here with me. In Matthew 26, we read that Jesus is going to pray in the garden. What does he bring with him? He brings company. Christ wants them to just be there with him. Christ is about to endure something that we will never be able to compare to. He was about to suffer like no one has suffered, and he knew that it was going to happen. He prayed to God, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. And in this time, he needed comfort. He needed company. And who better to be there for Christ than his disciples, the ones who have suffered along with him in their journeys? That is also your opportunity to share love. You may have went through or are going through something, but have the faith to look forward and say, because of this, I will come out stronger. I will understand that there is a plan set for me, an outcome that will be rewarding. Stand firm in your suffering and share love to those who are suffering. In 2 Corinthians 1, 3 through 4, it reads, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercy and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our afflictions, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. You have an opportunity to share love. My third and final point for tonight, and I promise it will be short, but it's something I need you to hear and take with you. It's an opportunity to grow. Complacency is what I think is the number one thing that us as college students are guilty of. When I looked up the word complacent for this lesson, a word popped up, and when I read it, a sense of guilt went over me. I don't understand what it was, but just this word, and with my mind in the lesson and learning about the opportunities to grow, the word was satisfied. When you become complacent, you're content with saying that you are good where you are, that you don't need anything else, nothing is wrong. It's a lie that we get in our heads to tell us that we're okay. We are good enough, that there are other people who are way worse than me, and compared to them, I'm doing really good. You no longer need to sing the beautiful and powerful song, "I Need Thee Every Hour," because through your complacency, you are saying that you don't need God anymore, that you have enough, that you are fine where you are. I never want to be in that place. I never want to be in a place where I say, or in my mind, or through my actions, I'm saying that I don't need any more, or I'm good where I'm at. The trials that are put in your life are not meant for you to be complacent. The trials in your life, the trials that you go through, are meant for you to grow. When you become complacent with your faith, you become cold, or at best lukewarm. And neither one of those things, according to Revelation 3:15, pleases God, or I will spit you out of my mouth. Standing firm doesn't mean becoming complacent. Standing firm when you are tried is an opportunity to grow. In conclusion, I want to read a verse, and Hunter read this verse for me, but I want to read it again to wrap up what I have presented, and the lesson will be yours. The righteous person may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from them all. Tonight is the time for you to reflect on what you're going through or have gone through and find a way to make purpose out of it, to find a sense of purpose. Tonight, you can remain complacent if that's where you're at and ignore the trials in your life that may be dragging you down. You can remain numb to everything, and you can stumble through life with ease but without meaning. Or you can take what James says to heart and persevere, to remain steadfast and come out with a faith perfected by God, lacking in nothing. You can choose to share hope with others. You can choose to share hope and give them meaning in their trials that they're going through because of the trials that you've personally been through. You can show love to those who need reassurance while they are in the midst of their trials. For when he has stood the test, he received a crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. To stand firm in the midst of our trials is to show that we have true love for God. Through our faith, through our strong faith that we will get if we stand fast. Now, saying this is a lot easier than putting it into action. I understand that. Having a stronger faith after going through a trial is easier said than done. But if you've taken what I've said and you look to the future when you're realizing all the things that you're going through, it's not going to be easy during the time that you're going through them. But when you look forward, you look ahead of after everything has outcome of everything, you will realize that you're better ministers. You'll be there for all those who are going through the things that you have gone through. You can look back at those trials that you had. Look back of everything that you went through. And you can say, I've been there. I understand where you're at. I know it's not easy. But you'll make it through as well. Maybe you're in one of these situations. Maybe you're in a situation where you are going through something. Maybe it's not as drastic as others, but like I said, it's not on a scale. We're not compared to other people when it comes to our struggles. You need to acknowledge the struggles, the trials that you're having. Don't put them on the back burner just because someone else has something bigger going on. Just because someone else is suffering through something bigger and more out there doesn't mean that you don't have something personally. Don't become complacent in your faith because you think others have it worse. Because you're not growing when you become complacent. And if you're not growing, then you're standing still. And when we're not standing, and when we're standing still, we're not growing anywhere closer to God. If you find yourself in this situation to where you're being complacent, I want you to reevaluate. Decide you need to make a change. Say, enough is enough. It doesn't mean coming up and sitting on a front row, because it doesn't matter. I don't care. But I do care about what you're going through. Even if you don't want to tell me, if you don't want to tell someone you're sitting with, find that struggle in your life, your personal struggles, and deal with them. Find a way to say that if I want my faith to be perfect, lacking nothing, that I need to build it up to where nothing can stop it. The invitation is open to you. If you need to make a change in your life, if you need to do it tonight, that's great. I urge you to do that. If something's going on in your life that you need to talk about, you need others to hear, well, there's hundreds of people in here that can help you that have probably been through something similar. And if not, they'll be there to listen to whatever you have to say. Because that's what we're here for as a church. That's what we need to do for each other. If we've gone through something, we're a better person to listen. We're a better ear for those who are struggling. So be that person for somebody else. Or find that person that you need to talk to. If maybe tonight you want to put on the Lord in baptism, we have that opportunity to do that. And that's great. No better thing can be done. But tonight, before you leave, or when you are by yourself in your dorm, if you need prayers, ask for more strength to have a stronger faith. Because even though all the trials that we're going through and everything that we go through, and you look at the end, you say, it's just to build my faith. Well, you're not understanding how important your faith is. You don't understand how strong faith is. If that's what you need tonight, I urge you to come as we stand and as we sing.